Never Let Me Go. Written by Yichia. Read by Argentum Lupin. Summary. Wei Wuxian has certainly hoped so ardently in his two lifetimes for so many different things in so many different ways that he could have summoned the demon to his front door with his bare hands. His eyes wander to Lan Zhan, settle on the back of his head, the blue-black curtain of his hair. Oh, how he has hoped. Can I touch you? In all the times that Wei Wuxian has been in Jingxia, he's only had the frame of mind to focus on one thing. One person. Everything in the cloud recesses is placed with a sort of heart and intention that only the Gusu Lan possess. The placement of things says that he should be paying attention to what it has to say. It, in itself, is a poem. Every book, every silk curtain, every piece of jade. They are placed together to mean something. The library is a speech. Jingxia is a song. Lan Zhan is its refrain. Wei Wuxian fears that he is the dissonance. Yeah, says Wei Wuxian. Go ahead. So he does. Lan Zhan touches him as if he is handling white jade, palms warm breaths on his skin, fingers gentle. Wei Wuxian bites back a joke about how hardy he is. He's built like a mule or a donkey, which may be why he and Little Apple work together so well. They're partners in crime. He also bites back a hiss of pain, because until now he'd been ignoring the strain in his shoulder. Lan Zhan had noticed him favoring his left arm when leading Little Apple down the rocky slopes of the cliffs they had met on. He'd picked apart Wei Wuxian's excuses easily, ignoring his claims that he'd slept on his arm wrong against a particularly unforgiving boulder, that he'd just overused his right hand to write spells. Part of his panicked attempts to wave Lan Zhan off rests with the fact that he's conditioned to write off his own pain. Pain? What pain? Wei Wuxian was born into pain, raised in the mercurial cradle of pain. He was molded and reborn and rewritten by pain. He doesn't know life free of it, and if he's honest, if he strips the truth down to its bones, he's terrified to know who he is without it. He's forgotten who he is without pain. The other more important part of it was that the thought of Lan Zhan's hands on his bare skin was so distressing that blood pounded manically through his brain. The strain is bad, Lan Zhan murmurs. He, on the other hand, seems wholly unperturbed by Wei Wuxian so close and half-naked, which is both reassuring and immensely disappointing. In the deep, hollow part of him where words echo, a lonely thought forms. Does Lan Zhan not want me anymore? Half-naked is also a stretch, considering who he is as a person, but sitting on a stool in Jingxia with his one arm pulled free of his robes and half his chest exposed seems like some sort of cardinal sin. Wei Wuxian nearly expects Lan Qiren to descend upon the steps outside and accuse him of being a tart. What did you do? A soft, warm sensation seeps into Wei Wuxian's skin, and he realizes that Lan Zhan is channeling spiritual energy directly into the pulled muscles. It's not much, but it does feel nice. You didn't mention a strain in any of your letters. It's new, Wei Wuxian says, shrugging his uninjured shoulder. Lan Zhan, I didn't have time to send you a letter from the last two cities I visited, and by then I wanted to return by surprising you. I didn't even have a chance to tell you about the last case I solved. It was by far the most interesting of all my travels. I would love to hear it. Would you? I figured you'd get bored of listening to all my ghost hunting, Lan Zhan. In the end, it's really all the same. A town in distress, a curse to break. Enter me, the anti-hero, the feared Yiling Laozu, a dark guardian, a storm in which all things are vanquished. And then I get a free dinner and I'm on my way again. It does get repetitive. I want to hear you tell every story. I will listen to all that you want to say. Wei Wuxian sits there as Lan Zhan feeds spiritual power into his shoulder, digesting these words. Then he mutters, Lan Zhan, listen to yourself. A rustle of shifting fabric as Lan Zhan presses a stray fold of robe out of the way of his working hand. He does not ask aloud. His movement alone is his question. In the past, you could not wait for me to stop talking. Now you want me to keep talking. If you say such things, I'll be forced to believe that you actually do miss the sound of my voice. Huh? I did. Oh, says Wei Wuxian. He hasn't gotten used to this, and doesn't think he will for a while. Lan Zhan offering the naked chambers of his heart to him. He doesn't know what to do with this blood. Really? It was a year of only letters. Before that, of all the sounds in this world, your voice is not one I can tire of. Wei Wuxian falls silent again. He knows if he opens his mouth, he'll either joke or cry, and neither feels appropriate. But then Lan Zhan removes his hand, and Wei Wuxian almost whimpers at the loss. He catches the noise before it can fall from his lips, stuffs it back into his throat where it belongs. Lan Zhan tugs at the loosened collar of his robes, holds the armhole open, and helps Wei Wuxian slide the fabric back up onto his shoulder. I shall ask the healer's apprentices to take a closer look at it later, says Lan Zhan, stepping away. Wei Wuxian feels his warmth shift. Perhaps a visit to the cold spring, too, may help. Xiang Zhang is teaching today, and there are meetings I must attend this afternoon, but someone will come see you. Okay, Wei Wuxian says, trying to swallow the sullen feeling that he can't just stay with Lan Zhan all day. He briefly considers sitting in on a meeting, as he would like to get an official update about where all the clans stand after his year of traveling off-grid, but dismisses the idea when he remembers Zhang Cheng will be there. It's been a year, sure, but this is delicate ice upon which Wei Wuxian isn't sure he can yet tread. Well, have fun now. I forgot for a second that Lan Zhan is his most distinguished excellency now. Lan Zhan fixes him with his unyielding gaze and, as if knowing, he says, I will be back to take dinner with you. No need, you must be so busy. I won't be in the evening, Lan Zhan says, not allowing Wei Wuxian to wave him off. He's busied himself with placing Wei Wuxian's traveling bag and his only other set of clothes atop his wardrobe. There's an extra space there beside the books, a space that looks recently vacated and dusted. Beechen flashes in the afternoon sun when he picks her up, a moonbeam between them. The bath, if you would like to use it. Thank you, Lan Zhan. I know I smell like dirt and grass and donkey and scallion pancake oil. Ah, scallion pancakes. No other place does it like Gusu. Wei Wuxian wishes he'd bought extra to munch on, but he'd hit the threadbare floor of his money bag, and it didn't look like he'd be able to take on a paying case with an injured shoulder. And my bed, if you would like to sleep, says Lan Zhan. Wei Wuxian stares at him. Lan Zhan seems to be completely serious about this. It's the middle of the afternoon, Wei Wuxian says. You are tired, Lan Zhan replies. That much is true. Wei Wuxian is tired, and he hadn't realized just how much until he'd sat down in the quietude of Jingxia. He doesn't know how Lan Zhan can tell, when even he is slow on the uptake, but he has long stopped wondering where and how Lan Zhan had learned to read him so easily. Don't worry about me, Wei Wuxian says. Then, when he realizes that Lan Zhan is very, very good at worrying about him, he tacks on, I can find my way around here. Cloud Recesses is like my second home now. Having a second home would imply the existence of a first. They come to this conclusion simultaneously because Wei Wuxian's smile fades and a slight shadow comes over Lan Zhan's eyes. Neither of them addresses it. Lan Zhan inclines his head. Then I will leave you to it. I'll see you soon, Lan Zhan. It feels so good to say this that Wei Wuxian has to fight down a shiver. To say it, and mean it, is a precious luxury. Soon. Wei Wuxian lasts all of 2 hours before it's too quiet. He's forgotten how serene Cloud Recesses is. Silence, in and of itself, isn't the problem, but the solitude. As it is still the middle of the day, every Lan disciple is in class or on a night hunt, so Wei Wuxian is left to his own devices. He's quite good at being alone. He's spent the better part of the last year being alone, but he was always surrounded by bustle and a donkey. Now he has furniture and books to keep him company, and the scent of Lan Zhan, but not Lan Zhan himself. He takes the bath. Soaking in scalding water shocks some feeling back into his skin after his travels. It feels good on his injured shoulder, too. There have to be half a dozen bottles and soaps lined up on the shelf beside the tub, and Wei Wuxian makes a few educated guesses. Nope, that's definitely not shampoo. Oh, but that is. Lan Zhan uses something that finally allows Wei Wuxian's hair to lie flat and silky against his back, though, and he is strangely excited to learn this inconsequential secret. Lan Zhan has hair a mile long, and it smells so nice. So this is what it is. After his bath, he sits out on the steps of the Jingxia and sniffs at the ends of his own hair as it dries in the sun. Jasmine oil, or maybe some sort of other flower. Wei Wuxian never bothered to learn. He figures he could swing by the library, pick up a few books to read if he's going to be by himself until the evening, until he hears a distant call of his name. Wei Qianbei! Wei Qianbei, you're back! Lan Sizhui already looks older. Teenagers grow like sprouts, Wei Wuxian had forgotten, and Sizhui's face is more angular than he remembers. Jingyi is beside him, with ink blot stains on his fingers, and an armful of scrolls and books bound in satin ribbon. Wei Qianbei, where have you been? It's been months. A year, actually. Why did you just disappear? We could have used you here.
What Jingyi means to say, says Sizhui, was that he missed you. As did I. Wei Qianbei, it's so good to see you again.
Sizhui beams, and Wei Wuxian's heart is full. Yes, I missed him. We all missed him. Who didn't? Hong Guanjun, most of all. I think he composed a dozen new songs just to express how much he...
Sizhui stomps on Jingyi's foot.
What did he do? Wei Wuxian asks.
Nothing, he did nothing,
Jingyi says, gingerly removing his foot from beneath Sizhui's. The glittering quartz gravel sports a divot where his foot had been.
Anyway, why have you returned, Wei Qianbei? Are you here for good? Will you go back to the Yunmeng Zheng sect?
Once, Wei Wuxian might have given anything to return to Yunmeng. His attachment to it won't ever be broken, but every single sparkling memory that he once had has been stained gray and blue, both by time and by the things he cannot take back. I'll stay for now. For as long as Hong Guanjun can stand to have me here, anyway. If I remember correctly, I've already broken at least 3 Lan sect rules by just existing within these walls.
If it were up to Hong Guanjun, he'd...
That's great, Sizhui says loudly. We're short on teachers, in fact, so there'll be plenty for you to do here.
Short on teachers?
The Gusu Lan have so many qualified cultivators scrambling to receive the honor to teach the next generation. How is that possible?
Sizhui and Jingyi exchange glances. Wei Qianbei, you haven't heard, have you?
Heard about what? There's an ongoing conference taking place here in the cloud recesses.
Jingyi hefts his bundle of books against his chest more securely. The lid of his inkwell rattles as a kettle does over a fire. Wei Wuxian does not remember having nearly this many books when he studied at the cloud recesses, so it's a good thing he finished schooling here when he did.
Nearly all the sect leaders have gathered to discuss a curse that's befallen Yueyang.
Not only Yueyang, but its neighboring cities as well. Shuilin, Kongjiang, and Jingxi have all been affected, says Sizhui.
4 cities? So it's not an isolated problem.
How have they let it get this bad? What does this have to do with the Lan family not having enough?
Oh, no, says Wei Wuxian. Don't tell me that all those that have been dispatched to investigate have gone missing.
Sizhui and Jingyi nod. At least 3 Lan patrols alone. We sent healers on our patrols as well, to help missing patrols from other sects, not realizing that they wouldn't return. Aside from the apprentices, Zewu Jun is the only one proficient in medical arts left in cloud recesses.
Wei Wuxian exhales, crossing his arms, even if the movement makes his shoulder twinge with discomfort. He'd only donned his red innermost robe, the clean one from his bag, and tied it loosely so as not to bind his muscles too tight.
What about the other sects?
His mind wanders over Zhangcheng, Jinling.
Same fates. Missing.
No one's turned up dead yet, though, so that's a good sign, says Jingyi.
Yet? Wei Wuxian cocks his eyebrow. Macabre little punk you are. So they've all gathered here in the cloud recesses to discuss emergency plans, I wager?
Sounds like it.
Ah, good old Gusu Lan. Wei Wuxian sighs, theatrically tossing his half-dry hair over his shoulder. So much talking, so little doing. It's good to be back.
What do we do, Wei Qianbei? Asks Sizhui.
What do you mean? It's not up to any of us to solve this. I'm but a mere visitor. Isn't that why all of them are meeting and sipping their chrysanthemum tea and getting so much done vanquishing evil?
Oh, says Jingyi, crestfallen.
And here I thought you'd come back to help us. I don't know why. I was just excited to go night hunting with you and Hong Guanjun again.
Wei Wuxian chuckles. Sorry to break it to you, Jingyi. He reaches out, squeezes his shoulder. Heavens, was he that bony at this age?
I am on strict orders not to overexert myself until further notice.
You survived 6 stab wounds before.
Yeah, and I'm no spring chicken anymore either.
Further notice is dinner.
Lan Zhan is so late for dinner that Wei Wuxian thinks he might have taken at the conference with the rest of the sect leaders. Little matter and little surprise. If what Jingyi and Sizhui had told him is true, then the problem at hand is not a small one. He might have to sit in the meeting hall right up until Lan bedtime. Just as the hour tiptoes past 8, Lan Zhan appears. Wei Wuxian sits on the porch of Jingxia, having pickpocketed the library of a book, and nearly misses Lan Zhan's arrival because he's so engrossed with his text. This book can't be more than a few years old, the spine still stiff and newly bound. It speaks of the integrity of unconventional cultivation. More than once, it references the so-called fourth method, the ghost path. There is no author named. The calligraphy looks awfully familiar. The crunch of gravel announces Lan Zhan's arrival first. Wei Wuxian smiles, leaps to his feet, then winces when he remembers his shoulder. Yeah, really not a spring chicken anymore. He would have recovered by sundown with his golden core, but it's been 2 days. Lan Zhan, you're back! He brushes off the backs of his robes, more out of instinct than need. The cloud recesses is immaculate. I was starting to think you'd miss bedtime. Have you eaten? For a moment, Lan Zhan just looks at him, plainly and without pretense. He stands lower than Wei Wuxian, who's on the topmost step, hand resting on the frame of the sliding doors. As always, he has one hand tucked neatly behind his back. Exhaustion softens the line of his shoulders. Still, he stands fringed in moonlight and evening fire. There is a drowning quality in his face, as if every steady breath he takes yearns to be a gasp. Lan Zhan, is everything okay? Wei Wuxian asks. Only then does Lan Zhan divert his eyes. He nods and follows him into the Jingxia. Then he sees dinner laid out on the table. You haven't eaten. Of course not. I was waiting for you. Lan Zhan sets Beechin down. I'm sorry that I did not keep my word. I should have returned earlier. What did we say about sorries and thank yous? Wei Wuxian sits with ease, folding his legs on his cushion. Come on, Lan Zhan. The food's already cold. So they eat together. Wei Wuxian had predicted that Lan Zhan's timing would be knocked awry by the conference, so he'd asked for cold dishes from the kitchens. But there's a difference between dishes served cold and dishes gone cold. The cucumber and garlic has sweated a little, and the shredded tofu skins have dried out. But sharing this meal with Lan Zhan means it's the best-tasting one he's had all year. Is your shoulder better? Better. The bath helped, you were right, Lan Zhan. Also, I hope you don't mind that I borrowed your soaps. Anything that is mine is yours, says Lan Zhan, without missing a beat. Wei Wuxian casts out wildly for a change of topic, because he hasn't the faintest how to respond to that. Right, so, I heard from some of the kids that there's trouble afoot. A mouthful of rice is poised halfway between his mouth and his bowl, balanced on his chopsticks. He is afraid they might be jade. Real jade chopsticks. The Gusulan are so excessive he wants to laugh. That this trouble, specifically, has called this conference. Want to fill me in? Lan Zhan takes a moment to chew and swallow. Then he lays his chopsticks across his rice bowl. There is trouble, he confirms, in Yueyang. Sizhui and Jingyi told me as well. Yueyang and the neighboring cities. Wei Wuxian leans in. What kind of trouble? Yueyang had been bustling, full of color and people and the noises of life thriving. They'd passed through just a year before, and Wei Wuxian had spent some time after parting with Sizhui and Jingyi this afternoon, racking his brains and trying to remember what could have befallen them. The Chang clan's mansion had long been quiet, and Shueyang is dead. Besides the usual critter, he can't think of anything drastic enough to call upon every sect. Lan Zhan eyes Wei Wuxian's chopsticks. Your rice. Wei Wuxian eats it before it topples into his lap. Sorry, you were saying? What kind of trouble? We are not certain. The conference was called to discuss missing persons from each sect that have been sent to aid the cities. Yueyang, Kongjiang, Jinji. There are missing cultivators from the Lan sect, from the Jiang sect, from the Jin and Nie sects. Even the minor families who sent those along with our patrols. It was reported this afternoon that an entire night hunt patrol from the Ouyang and Nie sects vanished just outside of Heilong, another neighboring city. Lan Zhan pauses, taking a deep breath. It's as close to a sigh as he ever allows. One of the disciples that went missing is Sizhui's friend.
Ouyang Zhijin? Wei Wuxian asks, sitting up in alarm. No, wait, yes, that was his name, right? He went missing?
His father, Ouyang Zhongxu, is beside himself with worry, Lan Zhan says. He reaches for his tea.
Wei Wuxian sits back, the ends of his chopsticks clacking against his rice bowl. No wonder Lan Zhan had been so late for dinner. Suddenly his appetite has shriveled like a fig in the sun.
Damn, he says. I like that kid.
I am sure. You remember his name.
Wei Wuxian snorts, reaching also for his wine. There'd been two bottles in Jingxia, and his heart had danced wild and frantic when he'd found them in the floorboards. He'd only peeked for old time's sake.
So, Distinguished Excellency, what have the leaders proposed we do? The way it sounds, this is no small matter.
They certainly had an unconventional approach.
Oh, I like unconventional. I invented unconventional, says Wei Wuxian. He forgoes his wine cup to reach for his bottle of Emperor's Smile, just half full now, and raises it to his lips.
They suggested you.
Wei Wuxian slops half his wine down his front. Lan Zhan seems to have predicted a reaction like this. He does not flinch, picking up his spotless silk napkin to offer across the table, holding his sleeve out of the food. Wei Wuxian receives it gratefully, nose burning from the alcohol going down the wrong pipe. His eyes water something terrible.
Me? He asks, voice weak from the coughing. What about me?
They seem to have come around and recognized your intelligence and quick thinking in difficult, unprecedented situations,
Lan Zhan says with an air of disdain. Something hot and thrumming swells in Wei Wuxian's chest, and it has nothing to do with the wine.
I informed them that you were not cattle to be driven as they pleased.
Lan Zhan!
Wei Wuxian laughs, which is really quite difficult to do through watery choking. He wheezes, hacks up the last drops of wine.
You did not!
A ghost of a smile flirts with the corners of Lan Zhan's lips.
So,
Wei Wuxian clears his throat two or three times more.
What then?
This, I said I would ask you. They seem to be surprised that we keep in regular contact.
Wait, ask me if I want to investigate this case?
Lan Zhan nods.
You and I both, of course. We would take some of the disciples of the sects along as well. Despite the danger, quite a few students are keen on being in your tutelage, Wei Ying. You and I both, of course.
Lan Zhan utters this with such conviction. Wei Wuxian has to focus on a whirl in the wood of the table when the words settle into his skin. Lan Zhan plans for a future in which Wei Wuxian is there. He doesn't allow himself to wonder how far into the future that timeline stretches. For a long time now, Wei Wuxian has accepted the lonely idea that his past with Lan Zhan is as much of Lan Zhan as he will ever get. The universe had offered him a small, perfect piece of herself in him. Wei Wuxian had stained it with blood. Abruptly, he's devoured by every memory he's ever had. The hunger to know a future with Lan Zhan in it isn't one that food can fill.
But what about your work here? What about Cloud Recesses? Isn't Zewa Jun still in seclusion?
For a while now, we have been in discussion for his eventual return to the cultivation world, says Lan Zhan.
His fingers are woven together loosely, makeshift wicker over his food.
Atonement does not take precedence over warm bodies.
Wei Wuxian sits with his hand curved over the opaline swell of his wine bottle.
I think so too, he says.
He wonders silently at the laws of the Gusu Lan, in which atonement once stood above all else. He wonders what has changed.
A musical clink when Lan Zhan takes his chopsticks in hand again. Wei Wuxian watches him pick up a single shred of carrot.
At any rate, yes, I'll investigate it.
Lan Zhan flicks his gaze up to Wei Wuxian's face, the carrot aloft in the air.
Are you certain?
Wei Wuxian thinks of the Chong Clan mansion, thinks of Yin Iron, thinks of frost and snow, thinks of the smell of wafting garlic oil and fried fish in restaurants during lunch, thinks of the naivete of four boys against an evil they won't understand for years. Years. It shouldn't be a good memory, and it isn't, really. The aftertaste of it is bittersweet, tea left too long to steep. But it's still warm, golden around the edges.
You're going with me, aren't you?
Yes.
Wei Wuxian smiles. Then, Lan Zhan, I am more than certain.
Lan Wangji visited Yue Yang a year before Wei Ying returned to the world.
The morning he was there, the sky had been pink-blue and newborn, the inside of a shucked oyster. It had rained for a week prior. This would be the first morning that the sun hosted the skies.
Daozhong, can I interest you in Yueyang's traditional Jihong cakes? They've been made fresh for the Fortune Festival. You must try.
It was so early in the morning that Lan Wenji could not fathom how every vendor and kitchen was awake and abuzz. Yet here was a young girl, snowy with powdered sugar and rice flour, offering him her basket of sticky rice snacks. He'd spared her a smile and shook his head. There had been a disturbance in Shuilin, so naturally Lan Wenji had followed the chaos. As always, he'd come up empty. No one had seen anything. No one had heard anything. Several declared that if the Yiling Laozu dared to show his face, they'd run him through with their sword. In his 12th year of mourning, Lan Shichen had stopped trying to persuade him to move on. Lan Wenji had also stopped trying to explain that he straddled two worlds, neither of which could be real. One in which Wei Ying was alive, and one in which he was dead. The purgatorial space between, full of brain fog and waking dreams, had become his home. Shuilin was next-door neighbors with Yueyang, and Lan Wenji had found himself in the market square.
"My lady," Lan Wenji called after the Jihong cake girl, "may I trouble you to ask, what is the Fortune Festival?"
"Daozhong, you don't know?"
She balanced her sugar-dusted basket of cakes on her hip. She gave him a long, scrutinizing once-over, and Lan Wenji squirmed uncomfortably.
"Hmm, you don't look like you're from around here. That's fine. Daozhong, Yueyang's Fortune Festival is a grand affair. All the neighboring cities come for the weekend to celebrate, to invite good fortune and a prosperous future. It's the reason we've had good business and wealth recently. Just as well. After the Chang clan met such a gruesome end, we deserve this luck."
She held out the basket again.
"Wouldn't you agree?"
This time, Lan Wenji plucks a sticky morsel of glutinous cake from the pile. Twice declining would be bad manners. She smiled.
"I see," he said. "Thank you."
"Do stay for the festival, Daozhong. If you make your wish here, you can be sure that it will come true."
Lan Wenji had only one wish.
"Hong Guanjun?"
It had not come true for 12 years.
"Hong Guanjun, what are you doing out here? We were looking for you."
Would it ever?
"Lanjan?" Lan Wenji blinks, comes back to himself, remembers where he is. Sandalwood incense drapes warm and heady over his shoulders. The Jingxia is quiet, and nearby is the sound of a shadow moving in the dark. Beneath him is the unforgiving wood of his bed. It grounds him.
Then Wei Ying's face slides into the damp, oblong pool of moonlight that filters into his room. The pattern of the tasseled curtains cut his face in light, shadow, the surface of Lan Wenji's guqin. Wei Ying has shed his outer robe, but his hair is still pulled up in his half-ponytail. A single candle burns low in a quivering puddle in its long-stemmed holder. On the desk, an open book. Wei Ying hasn't gone to bed yet.
"Lan Zhan, are you okay? I thought you'd fallen asleep."
"I am fine."
Wei Ying blinks down at him. They both know that Lan Wenji isn't telling him the truth, but that this lie is insignificant enough for Wei Ying not to press. He's not sure how it would feel if he did. A thumb to a bruise, a dull ache.
"Do you have something I can burn in the incense to help you sleep?"
He steps back to peer around in the dim light. Lan Wenji shakes his head. He is sleepy, though, so his mouth moves before his brain authorizes it.
"Lie down with me."
Silence. Wei Ying doesn't react, which is both a better and a worse sign than Lan Wenji could have hoped for.
"With you?"
he whispers. Wei Ying has slid back into shadow. His words are more touch than sound.
"Yes."
"In your bed?" Lan Wenji nods. "No, Wei Ying, on the floor. Where else would he mean?" He hovers in the safety of dark blues and indigos for several more breathless seconds. Then, "Okay." Wei Ying blows out the candle, and the cloying scent of an extinguished flame spreads its fingers through Jingxia. He moves as though he's approaching an injured animal, with measured steadiness, like Lan Wenji might bolt if he crosses the room at a normal speed. The bed clunks at his added weight, unused to two people after years of only one occupant, and Lan Wenji shifts so that he has room. He's already taken off his shoes. They share the pillow. Lanwanji's breathing has kicked up, and he now is getting even less sleep than he was before.
"Does this help?" Wei Ying whispers.
They lie so close together that decidedly holding their bodies away from each other seems silly, but Lanwanji is too afraid to reach out, because he might not let go come morning. Wei Ying is close enough that he can feel the subtle warmth of him, can smell him. The same fresh florals of his soaps and bath oils, familiar, but settling into Wei Ying's own scent. He closes his eyes.
It helps.
The Gusu Lan are not a chatty, gossip-mongering bunch, but everyone knows by morning that Yiling Laozu Wei Wuxian has taken up residence in the cloud recesses. A selfish satisfaction curls in Lan Wanji's belly when he thinks that they won't know this, that Wei Ying turns soft and pliant in the morning, easily maneuvered in body and limb, warm as embers in a foggy morning. He pulled the blankets up to his chin as soon as the bed was empty, curling into a tight ball.
Lan Zhan,
he complained.
It's so early and so cold.
There are sect leaders to talk to. This is the last morning of deliberations. They are keen to know your answer.
Do I have to come?
Wei Ying asked, rising out of sleep.
Yikes, I don't know if I'm awake enough to face Zhang Cheng right now.
No, you do not. I will deliver the message for you, if you like.
Then Wei Ying had blinked up at him. His hair was unbound, spread in a hurricane over the pillows. He is a dark tidal pool. He is the surf. And Lan Wanji is sea glass tumbled smooth in his pull.
Hongguanjun,
he said, still sticky with sleep. He'd buried his face into the blankets.
How did I ever get so lucky?
Lan Wanji dwells on the weight of those words. No one, of course, has the nerve to confront Lan Wanji about it openly, but the second he steps into the meeting hall, some 3 dozen pairs of eyes turn to stare at him with a kind of confusion, Shufu, grudging respect, Jinling in company, and annoyance, Jiang Wanyin, that he does not usually receive at 7 in the mornings. So they know. News about Wei Ying travels as fast and cunning as the ghosts he controls. Nie Huaisong does not spare him the glance. Lan Wanji concludes that he already knew. They rise, putting their hands together in greeting.
Good morning, he says. Thank you for coming. I am aware this is early for sect members not of the Lan clan. This meeting shall commence at 7 a.m. to discuss.
Lan Wanji seats himself at the front of the hall, pulls a fresh scroll across his writing desk.
The misfortune of Yue Yong.
Excellency!
Says Jinling.
Is it true that Wei...
Zhang Wenyan aims a jab with Sandu's pommel into his thigh.
Shut up!
He hisses. It's useless. A hum of chatter falls over the congregation, an unkindness of ravens, as cultivators murmur amongst themselves. Lan Wanji waits in silence until it passes. Then he raises his chin and says,
Yes.
Then what did he say? Ouyang Zhangxu asks. Did he agree to our request? Every second that passes, the likelihood of finding my son fades. We mustn't dawdle any longer. What if, by now... Ouyang Zhangxu, you can't be so desperate that you're seriously considering asking the Yiling Laozu for help.
Oh, heavens. Lan Wanji loses hair every time Yao Zhangxu opens his mouth.
Even if he's not who we once thought he was, how do you know he's strong enough to go against the misfortune of Yue Yang? This demon, monster, or whatever curse hasn't left a single survivor. You're thinking too selfishly. If the Yiling Laozu gets hurt, how are you going to face His Excellency?
Yao Zhangxu has a bizarre talent for backhanded concern. Someone from another minor clan, the Xindao Chen, speaks up.
The Yiling Laozu uncovered the corruption of Jin Guangyao. Why would you doubt him so?
Right. The misfortune of Yue Yang is a problem that we've never seen before, and one that we have tried and failed to mitigate. Who better to solve this than the Yiling Laozu, he who walks his own path?
Lan Wanji settles his palm on the strings of his guqin. The chatter ceases as though a silencing spell had fallen over the hall.
Wei Wuxian, he says, every syllable a taut bowstring, has agreed to work on solving the misfortune of Yue Yang.
The hall promptly erupts into chatter again.
That's great news! When can he start? Today? Tomorrow? The sooner the better.
I haven't seen him practice his cultivation in months, and he was dead all those years. Is he cut out for this?
Excellency, with all due respect, I understand you have maintained your
friendship with him, but are you sure your judgment on his abilities is sound?
He won't expect to get paid for this, will he?
He should consider this our mercy, his debt,
his repentance.
Then, I don't need your mercy or your money, but thank you, Yao Zongzhu. At least a dozen of you have tried to kill me in the past. One of you succeeded.
Zhang Wanyin squirms uncomfortably. A life for yours, my debt repaid, hmm? Mercy is a little belated at this point.
A backlit shadow, framed by the yolk-yellow Gusu sunrise, stands in the entrance of the meeting hall.
Wei Ying.
Lan Wangji rises from his seat. No one else does.
Morning, everyone. Hi, Jinling.
Hey.
Jinling mumbles, mortified. If Lan Wangji's memory serves him correctly, Wei Ying had paid a few visits to Koi Tower during his travels just to visit his nephew, and might have not so accidentally plied him with more alcohol than he could handle the last time he'd been there. According to his letter, that had made for highly amusing and also highly punishable behavior.
I'm sorry, Lan Zhan. I try not to make grand entrances like this anymore. Not really my style. I promise you all, I am not here to antagonize you. Look, I didn't even bring a weapon.
He holds his arms out, and indeed, he is unarmed.
Listen, you guys can say what you want about me, but it doesn't do well to doubt Lan Zhan to his face. He doesn't have my patience. Just take it from me.
The sect leader from Xindao Chen simply scoffs in disbelief when Wei Ying turns to face Lan Wangji.
I've already agreed to help. Whatever I can or can't manage is on me, not on him. Besides, I won't be taking on this case alone. Have you all forgotten what Lan Zhan and I can do when we work together?
There are no murmurs this time. The meeting adjourns shortly afterwards. There isn't much left to discuss if the council's wild card has agreed to be played, and sect leaders and disciples alike filter out of the Cloud Recesses meeting hall for breakfast. Wei Ying hangs back, waiting for Lan Wangji to finish meeting one-on-one with several stragglers who have unrelated concerns. Zheng Wanyin, who had been seated close to the stage at the front of the hall, is one of the last to leave. The small party of Yunmengzheng disciples hurries along in his wake, but pause with him when he does. A new hairpiece glitters at the knot upon his head, a jewel-encrusted lotus, complete with filigree webbing. The amethyst winks in the sunrise. The contrast of him standing beside Wei Ying is stark. One is nearly swallowed by the sun, the other a dark lotus with a cloak wide enough to be vulture wings. Lan Wangji is only half paying attention to what Ouyang Zhangzhu is saying, but Zhang Wanyin simply gives Wei Ying a curt nod before he sweeps from the hall. He will not be sending Zhang disciples on this night hunt with them. It takes a while longer, an eternity longer, but Lan Wangji is finally freed from being Excellency for a brief hour before morning class. Wei Ying has waited for him this whole time, leaning against one of the wooden posts outside the hall with his arms crossed. His eyes are blank, fixed in the gravel pavilion, lost in thought.
You're awake.
I couldn't sleep after you left, he says. I got up to wander, and then I heard these guys giving you a hard time. Do they always talk to you like that? You should flex your title more, Lan Zhan.
Lan Wangji looks at him, really looks at him, in a way that the elation of Wei Ying's return hadn't given him a chance to. He doesn't wear red much anymore, if at all, though his belt is new and has reinforced cross-stitching along the edges. The ribbon in his hair is black with the crimson embroidery of a rising phoenix threaded in gold. There are cuts on his knuckles. His hair rushes in a black river over his shoulders. He must have discovered the wonders of camellia oil.
I have no desire to rule with an iron fist, says
Lan Wangji, trying to remember what he was going to say.
But the way they speak of you, even now, is...
an improvement, Wei Ying says. Lan Wangji squints.
Ay-ya, Lan Chan, lighten up. It's okay. It's pretty flattering to be so formally hired by the collective cultivation world. Yiling Laozu, the Dark Bounty Hunter, is a much cooler title than Yiling Laozu, the Demonic Cultivator.
Wei Ying.
Okay, okay, when do we start?
After I speak to Zhang Zhang. There are arrangements that need to be made, and sect leaders who have disciples they want to send with us. We'll depart before sundown tomorrow.
Is it bad that I'm excited? Wei Ying asks.
A smile tugs on the corner of Lan Wangji's mouth. He shakes his head, just once, and Wei Ying gives him the brilliant smile he so adores. Lan Shichen is awake, eyes closed. tranquil. He does not open them when Lan Wangji invites himself inside, though he does smile, just briefly. His hands rest on his knees as he meditates. Lan Wangji bows, then waits.
You are leaving, says Lan Shijin.
It is not a question.
The misfortune of Yue Yong cannot be ignored any longer, Xiangzhang. Cultivators from all sects have sent some of their most competent. I cannot turn a blind eye and allow them to send more people to an uncertain fate.
Lan Wangji does not know why this all sounds like an excuse when he says it, like he's defending an argument that hasn't even come. Lan Shijin opens his eyes. Between the two of them, Lan Wangji is the one who has spent much of his life in an eternal winter. His soul was never frozen, always a warm thing that glowed beneath the snow. But there was always snow. Now he cannot look at his brother without seeing frost in the lines of his face, his eyes. He caves under the weight of the icicles upon his bones, even in the summer months.
Wei Ganzi will accompany you.
Still not a question.
He will, Xiangzhang. A sigh that disturbs the smoke of the incense.
I don't suppose I can convince you to stay, can I, Wangji?
Lan Wangji shakes his head.
I am glad.
This isn't the logical thing to say next. He would have expected, following Wei Ganzi is a lightless path, Wangji, or, this is a dangerous mission, perhaps reconsider the weight of your duty.
Xiangzhang?
If he has returned to you, this universe has made her decision. Be sure to listen, Wangji.
Lan Shichen breathes in, pulling the scent of sandalwood deep into the well of his lungs.
But if you are to leave, then I understand I will be overseeing some of your responsibilities. Let us go over them. I won't waste your time.
Do stay for the festival, Daozhang. If you make your wish here, you can be sure that it will come true.
Hong Guanjun, is everything okay? Lan Sizhui had procured a sack full of Jihan cakes earlier in the evening, no doubt per Lan Jingyi's suggestion. Dusting the corner of his mouth was a smudge of powdered sugar. He held out his hand in offering, down to his last few, and Lan Wangji shook his head.
Fine, Sizhui.
The fortune festival of Yue Yong, as the confectionery girl had promised, was no small affair. The market was draped in a light show of color. Silks of red and gold and seafoam blue wrapped every eave and ceiling rafter. Coiling dragons and phoenixes studded the pillars of the winehouses. The air curled with the smell of oysters frying in eggs, of braising squid, of clams and chicken soup. A child passed from door to door, handing out red ribbons tied on cypress twigs. The confectionery girl was still in the streets, selling jihan cakes to the people who had gathered in the city. Red beaded tassels swung from her braids. The others would like me to thank you. Lan Wangji did not register who the others were for a long moment. Sizhui smiled when he turned to him in question. They said it was unlike you to stay behind after a night hunt to celebrate local festivities, but I think they're too afraid to thank you directly, said Sizhui. Lan Wangji cast his eyes down. He said,
You and all of the disciples have pushed yourselves for this hunt. Discipline and work must be balanced with acknowledgement.
Daozhang!
The child with the ribbon twigs had circled the city square to Lan Wangji, on the edge of a sprawling fruit display.
Daozhang and Yang Ganzi, please take a wishing branch for the festival.
He shook his basket, almost empty, with only a few twigs left.
My young master, Lan Sizhui said, what does a wishing branch do?
Yang Ganzi, the wishing branch is to be tossed during the parade. The legend says that a man from Yue Yong tossed his walking stick of cypress into the river in his frustration for his misfortunes and answered the god's will for earth to balance water after the water gods had grown too tyrannical. So the earth gods blessed him and all the lands surrounding the river with good fortune.
He rattled the basket.
You must take one too and toss it for your own good fortune.
Sishui smiled and hooked his finger through the ribbons of two twigs, long and slender as chopsticks.
What kind of fortune?
Any at all, said the boy. Good studies, prosperous returns, and glowing health.
He turned to Lan Wangji.
Or luck and love.
Sishui glanced at him.
Ganzi, if there's anyone you hold beloved, if you wish for their heart in return, then your wish will certainly come true.
This boy couldn't be more than 8 or 9. Stray wisps of hair escaped from his bun, held together with a redwood hair stick. The picture of a small face smiling up from the vicinity of Lan Wangji's waist shook something in his chest that had been quiet for a long time.
"My heart's beloved," he murmured, "left this world many, many years ago."
"Oh," said the child, his smile fading. "They say if you toss the wishing stick for dead loved ones and say their name when you do, they will hear you."
He blinked up from the rim of his basket.
"What was your beloved's name?"
Lan Wangji lifted his face. Across the street was a restaurant with a green sign hung over its entrance, darkened by the curtains of silks. Cheating Winehouse.
"Wei Ying."
Lan Wangji stands in the doorway of Jingxia, midday classes adjourned, and watches Wei Ying doze with his head in his arms upon the writing desk. Wei Ying, solid, asleep, and alive without circumstance. He could reach out and touch him, and the uneven heat of his body would be under Lan Wangji's palms. A book lies open to its last chapter, pinned beneath his wrists. Without seeing the title, Lan Wangji knows it's the one he had pinned himself, anonymously, about the virtues of alternative cultivation methods. It is locked in the forbidden chamber for most of its life. Of course Wei Ying had found it. He doesn't budge even when Lan Wangji calls his name. He must have gotten up right after Lan Wangji had left, before the sun had kissed the horizon red. Just as well. Sleep will be elusive once the case starts. He crosses his room silently, pulling the topmost blanket from his bed to drape around Wei Ying's shoulders. The weight of the silk has barely touched his body when Wei Ying jolts, hand shooting out, a strike of a snake, to close vise-like around Lan Wangji's wrist. His expression is wild, a soft animal trapped in teeth.
"Wei Ying, it is just me,"
Lan Wangji says, barely daring to breathe.
"Are you tired? Go back to sleep in my bed."
Lan Zhan. Wei Ying relinquishes his grip on his hand, leaving behind leopard spots where the pressure of his fingers had sent the blood rushing from Lan Wangji's skin. "You're back. I didn't realize. I'm okay. It's easier to sleep sitting up than lying down with this shoulder."
"It is still not better?"
"It's better," Wei Ying waves. "I just don't want to aggravate it by sleeping on it by accident. Did all the arrangements work out?" Lan Wangji purses his lips. Wei Ying does not look at him, smoothing down the wrinkled page of the book, with the blanket hanging off one shoulder. The injured one. He sits down beside him. Wei Ying has a moment to let surprise color his face before Lan Wangji curls his hand around the side of his head, tugs gently, and presses Wei Ying's face into his chest.
"If you are tired, sleep," he says.
His heart is fevered lightning in his ribs. He is sure that Wei Ying can hear it.
"Yes, the arrangements are set. Zhang Zhang will sit in for me for the duration of the case. About 10 disciples are coming with us, including Jinling and Sizhui."
"This night hunt will be dangerous," Wei Ying says. His breath is warm across Lan Wangji's throat. "I suppose it's useless to tell them that, though."
"Jinling especially."
"Jinling especially," Wei Wuxian agrees, chuckling. His body is the roll of thunder. Together, they are one storm. "Will Cloud Recesses be okay without you?"
"Zhang Zhang is more than capable."
"That's true. Don't tell Zewa Jun that I doubted him."
"He would tell you that you are right to."
Wei Ying laughs again, quieter this time. They sit together in silence. Wei Ying shifts until more of his body is pressed against the lines of Lan Wangji's chest. His forehead rests in the curve of Lan Wangji's throat, which he can't imagine is comfortable when he speaks, and the thrum of his voice reverberates through Wei Ying's skull. "Lan Zhan?" "When we solve this case, will you go night hunting with me again?" Lan Wangji tucks in a stray satin-lined edge of the blanket. "I'll try to make it so that we go around sundown so you can still sleep on time every night." Wei Ying pulls a caught lock of hair free where it was tugging at Lan Wangji's scalp, then nestles his head against his shoulder again. "It's no easy task, being Excellency, I'm sure." "Oh, Wei Ying, how many years Lan Wangji had spent dreamless and asleep before he met you, you will never know." Yueyang is 3 days' travel from Gusu on foot and on donkey. Travel by sword is out of the question until they understand what the danger is.
"Why does little Apple have to come?" says one of the Jin disciples. He'd been one of the kids who used to bully Jin Ling, but Wei Wuxian is under the impression that they're now friends. It helps when your uncle is the Yiling Lao Tzu.
"She brays every time she's unsatisfied with the food.
which is always, "Some of us don't have a golden core, thank you. I tire out in half a day." "What?" asks Wei Wuxian when some of the disciples trade uncomfortable looks. "Oh, relax. It's fine. He asked a valid question. She's a noisy one, isn't she?" So Little Apple comes. She's willing to go wherever Lan Zhan is, because where Lan Zhan is, so are apples. Wei Wuxian is fairly certain she likes Lan Zhan more than she likes him, not that he can blame her. He likes Lan Zhan astronomically more than he will ever like himself. They have so much in common. Evening has fallen on their first day of travel, so they file into a small village with gates built of limestone and granite. A single bell tower overlooks the entrance. The sign is worn but well kept, Sheen Soon in fresh black lettering. It smiles down upon them. This region is close enough to Gusu that none of the villagers seem surprised to see Lan Zhan at the head of their troop, though their eyes do linger on Wei Wuxian and his ill-behaved donkey as they pass through the main markets. The Jins and Ouyangs are rare sights, too, but most of them huddle in between the two lines of Lan students.
"Sizhui," says Lan Zhan.
Jing Yi steps aside for Sizhui to come to the front. He bows.
"Han Guanjun?"
"There is an inn up ahead. Please inquire about their vacancy. If they ask, let them know that I have brought disciples and a partner."
"A partner?" The vertebrae of Wei Wuxian's neck are jammed. His head won't turn. He has wondered long and hard what he and Lan Zhan are. Once they had been rivals, then they had been friends. Then he and Lan Zhan had stood on opposite sides of a voidal ravine, one that he could not jump and one that he did not let himself reach across. In him, Wei Wuxian had seen a soulmate. Whether or not Lan Zhan ever saw that in him, well, it didn't matter, did it? He died. Now he's alive, and sometimes, when the sun sets, he'll catch Lan Zhan watching him. Wei Wuxian has not ever seen him look at anyone else the same way. "A partner. Is that what this is?" It's such a threadbare word. Sizhui only pauses a second too long, blinking rapidly, before he bows again.
"Yes, Han Guanjun."
"Jing Yi."
"Yes, Han Guanjun." He doesn't need the task spelled out for him. He and Sizhui dart ahead, silver hairpieces bobbing in the crowd like arrows.
"Huh, Lan Zhan," says Wei Wuxian. His voice quavers horribly, and he clears his throat.
"Huh, I didn't expect you to be a regular at an inn here, of all places. I'm impressed."
"I did my own share of traveling."
"Oh, when?"
"Over the past few years."
"Over the past few years? But I thought..." "Oh," says Wei Wuxian, throat officially closing this time. I see." Lan Zhan could not have gotten his new title, He Who Appears in Chaos, for nothing. Wei Wuxian has heard of this reputation, of how Lan Zhan would appear in any place that darkness festered, and it's not one people are eager to bring up. Only Zhang Cheng had the nerve to use it to Lan Zhan's face.
"Wish I could have been with you,"
he says, voice thin and fractured. He shakes with the weight of how much he means it. All the years of night hunts that Lan Zhan passed alone washed down the river.
"You are here now."
"Yes, he is here now." He cannot reconcile how this forgives his absence. "Yes, he is here now, but what purpose does his existence serve if he's fulfilled Nie Huaisong's vengeance?" That expression that Lan Zhan gets when he looks at Wei Wuxian, gods, the one where he looks like he's drowning. It is always dusted with the grit of grief. The fires of Sheen Soon turned Lan Zhan's cheeks amber and coral in the evening. Wei Wuxian fixes his gaze on the line of his profile, can't look away, tongue heavy with unborn questions that he doesn't have the courage to ask.
"How did you wait so long? Why would you wait so long? Why would you wait for me?"
"Lan Zhan?" "Han Guanjun," calls Jing Yi. "There are rooms enough for all of us. We might have to squeeze, but it shouldn't be a problem." Wei Wuxian hangs back to lead Little Apple to the communal stables out by the back of the inn. She's uncharacteristically quiet, though she must be hungry, and doesn't even tug on the reins when he loops them around the hook. "Are you going to be okay here by yourself tonight? It's not cloud recesses, I know." She bobs her head low to nose at the hay lining the stall. In the neighboring stalls, a few piebald horses hang their heads over the sides of the doors, curious about their new stablemate. "Don't bother your new friends," he says, giving her one last pat.
The disciples are deciding roommates when Wei Wuxian makes it back inside the inn. Sizhui and Jing Yi come as a duo, so no one tries to separate them. It takes a minute, but Wei Wuxian deduces that the current problem is that there are only 4 rooms open, and between the 12 of them, it means 5 disciples would have to share a room. Wei Wuxian frowns. Wait, 5? How is that right? It'd be 4, 3, and 3. 10 pairs of disciple eyes turn to stare at him.
I thought you were supposed to be a genius, says Jin Ling.
Sounds like a you problem, says Wei Wuxian.
Wei Qianbei, the group with 4 gets the biggest room if there is one, Wei Wuxian explains. You know, because when you divide 10 by 3...
Wei Qianbei, wouldn't you and Han Guanjun have separate rooms? Wei Wuxian blinks. Oh. Huh. He hadn't considered that.
Would they?
He looks at Lan Zhan, who does not meet his eyes when he says, Wei Ying and I will share a room. There is a very long silence, punctuated by the innkeeper's sigh. Her brush is still aloft over her booking scroll.
Right, well then, that's that, says Sizhui. Innkeeper, please put Wei Qianbei and Han Guanjun in one room, and 4, 3, and 3 of the rest of us in each remaining room. Jingyi, Yu, Jinling, Jin Chengyuan, and I can take the 4-person room.
But Jin Chengyuan snores. Wei Wuxian clears his throat, and they fall silent and incline their heads. We will redistribute the rooms as needed, says Lan Zhan in the ensuing quiet. But for now, please follow me. Before we reach Yueyang, there is information about this night hunt I must impart on you. The shuffle of footsteps falling on the stairs is a rhythmic war drum as they climb the flight to the 2nd floor. Wei Wuxian leans in beside Lan Zhan, though the staircase is so narrow their shoulders bump.
Is this about the curse on Yueyang?
Is there a reason not to discuss it downstairs? The demon has big ears. Wei Wuxian stares.
No way. It can't possibly hear us from all the way out here, can it? I thought it was local to the Yuecheng district.
Cannot be sure. We refrain from speaking of it more than necessary, even in the cloud recesses. They get the room at the very end of the hall, with the door facing the corridor. The disciples file in quietly, then stand in a hodgepodge near the door even after Wei Wuxian shuts it behind them. Lan Zhan doesn't speak until he comes back up to the front and stands beside him. The official name of this case, he says, is the misfortune of Yueyang. Not much is known about the dark entity that wreaks this havoc. People are afraid to talk, and there have been no escapees with clues from which to work. You all have been chosen as capable disciples. We will need to exercise utmost caution.
What do we know, then? Wei Wuxian asks. He's curious, too.
The problem affects the major cities in Yuecheng district, Yueyang, Jinxi, Kongjiang, and now Heilong. The epicenter is in Yueyang, spreading outwards.
Lan Zhan pauses, collects his thoughts.
The working theory is that it is a demon. It spreads like an epidemic, but what few reports we have received from the residents indicate that it is not simply a disembodied curse. It is too indiscriminate to be a ghost, too malicious for an imp.
A demon?
Wei Wuxian rests his elbows against the wrist of his other arm, propping his chin on his knuckles. He hasn't come across many of those. Most of his cases during his solo travel involved curses and the occasional fierce corpse. Most of them.
What does it do, Han Guanjun?
It is an entity of misfortune. In Yueyang, for 2 years now, every wish has backfired. Every prayer is not only unanswered, but the opposite effect will occur. If an individual hopes for something, the entity will hear it and twist it so that misfortune befalls them. Businesses have gone belly up. Entire families have been plagued by strange maladies. Schools have been driven into disrepair without enough students.
Wei Wuxian crosses his arms.
That's a lot worse than I imagined. How long? 2 years?
2 years.
Lan Zhan's expression is unreadable. He knows something that he won't say in front of the juniors. Wei Wuxian narrows his eyes, but Lan Zhan tears his gaze away.
Then how do we address it? Asks one of the Ouyang disciples.
Well, how do you think we should address it? Asks Wei Wuxian. All the disciples immediately look down, staring at their feet in an effort not to be called on. The Ouyang student fumbles.
Our options are to liberate, suppress, or eliminate. So we should start by trying to figure out what its dying wish was and try to grant it, if possible. If we understand why it's causing the trouble it's causing, then it might liberate the cities.
A few pairs of eyes peek up at Wei Wuxian. He wants to chuckle. Oh, so they still want to know the answer. But it's a demon, though. And what do demons come from? Living people. Right, so if the person never died, how could it have a dying wish? So we'd have to suppress it, says one of the Nie disciples. She's so short that the others have to step out of the way so she can speak. And if it is too powerful to be suppressed, which sounds like it might be, then we'd have to eliminate it by exterminating it completely. Theoretically, sure, yeah. The disciples trade glances.
But then there is your way, Wei Qianbei, says the first Ouyang kid. Would a demon respond better to demonic and resentful spells? We would be playing in its playground instead of ours. Dark fighting dark. So maybe it's something we can harness against it?
Wei Wuxian's eyebrows almost join his hairline. You would entertain using methods derived from demonic cultivation?
Why not?
There is no mockery in his voice. He's being completely serious with this question.
We've all brought our spiritler flags and compasses of evil already, says Jing Yi, and the disciples nod in agreement. If that's what it takes, then of course we're up for it.
Wei Wuxian opens his mouth. Is all he manages. So far in his few short-lived lives, suggesting the usage of resentful energy has earned him a scroll to the face, lines in the library, and an arrow in his chest. It's taking him a second to digest that this troop of disciples from nearly all the major sects is actively suggesting that he use it for this case.
We shall approach with the method of suppression first, as it is the one you are all most familiar with, Lan Zhan finally says when it becomes obvious that Wei Wuxian's larynx has failed. Ouyang Xufei is right. Demons are not quite as common as ghosts or other Yao. Suppression is not always successful. In that event, then, he turns to Wei Wuxian, there are methods better suited to speaking a language a demon will understand.
Me?
Wei Wuxian jabs his own thumb into his chest. And here he was thinking he was just chaperoning this field trip. They were serious about him being a dark bounty hunter.
Yeah, you. Other than Hong Guanjun, who else is powerful enough to vanquish an evil like that?
Well, Hong Guanjun said you're one of the most powerful cultivators of the Sunshot generation, demonic or not, and he wouldn't lie.
You're right, he wouldn't, but...
We will help you, Lan Zhan says. His voice always cuts over chatter like a knife to the jugular. I will help you. You won't have to do any of this alone.
A small, grudging breath of a laugh rushes through Wei Wuxian's nose. The disciples nod.
Okay, he says. Okay, if the need arises, then I'll do it.
Then they break for dinner. The disciples go downstairs first, silent until they file into the hallway and melt into the rolling bustle of the inn. Jin Ling's muffled voice rises above the gentle din.
He is not boring! He's being safe for you, ungrateful dogs! Last time he... Shut up!
Damn, I guess I'm boring now, Wei Wuxian says, crossing his arms, the tassel of Chen Qing whacking him in the jaw when he swings her up to press into the crook of his elbow. He appraises the closed door, suddenly and acutely aware of how alone he and Lan Zhan really are. Jin Ling's not wrong. I spent the past year writing controls for all of my most powerful spells so that they can be used safely. Imposing restrictions on your own magic is totally uncool. I get it.
Jin Ling is defensive of you.
The floorboards creak as Lan Zhan moves around the room to slide the windows open. The wet breeze of summer evening hooks her arms over the windowsill, then invites herself in.
Not just Jin Ling.
Wei Wuxian turns where he stands. How are these kids all so keen on dipping their pristine toes into something once so reviled? Lan Zhan mutely lights the rest of the candles. Even with the breeze, the air is smothered. The same wordless swell of emotion presses at his throat when his words settle between them and the fragmented pieces fall into place. That nameless book he'd pilfered from the library. Why Jing Yi and Sizhui carry so many texts to class now. How every disciple carries not only a spirit flag, but also a compass, and heavens know what else. How long have you been teaching them alternative cultivation? Finally, Lan Zhan faces him.
Not long, he says. Only for the past few years.
After Wei Wuxian's name had been cleared. This makes sense. Then he recalls the chaos of Mo Manor and asks, the spiritler flags, and the compasses, the talismans. Lan Zhan holds his gaze, even and unwavering. He is waiting for the question. Was that all you?
No answer.
Wei Wuxian steps toward him. Knowing the Lan clan, of how staunchly you walk the righteous path, it must have been hard to integrate it into the education of not only the Gusu Lan, but so many other sects, Wei Wuxian says. Why did you do it? He stops in front of Lan Zhan, who finally tears his eyes away from Wei Wuxian's face and focuses on the floor. They are so close that Wei Wuxian could reach out and touch him. He should. He wants to.
When a soulmate asks you to believe in them, you do,
Lan Zhan says, just before Wei Wuxian can.
And I failed to do so when it mattered most.
But I told you that you have no sin for which you need to atone.
This isn't atonement.
Wei Wuxian worries the soft inside of his mouth between his teeth. When he uncrosses his arms, his hands come away shaky. Lan Zhan takes a broken, shuddering breath when Wei Wuxian touches him. He does nothing more than settle his hand against his chest, feel the wing beat of his heart beneath his sternum, but his heart sings back, I'm here, I'm here, I've been here all this time. Then what is this, Lan Zhan? They stand locked in a static dance in which both of them are too afraid to step first.
Wei Ying.
Then, from downstairs, and muffled through the wood, Wei Qianbei, Hong Guanjun, are you hungry? And the trance is broken. The light scatters. The breeze makes herself known again, rattling the shutters for attention. Wei Wuxian smiles and drops his hand, but not without dragging it down the length of Lan Zhan's body before his fingers fall away. Let's go eat. When Lan Zhan doesn't budge, Wei Wuxian sighs with exasperation, grabs his hand, and tugs. Come on! Lan Zhan's hand is a warm thing in his palm. A handful of quartz. A son. A rabbit newborn.